If you don't like what we tell you to believe in, we'll kill you.
TheRightStuff.biz.
What's up? Welcome to Tedious episode 1096, I think. Not sure, but I'll get it right by the time we are finished with the show. I am your host today, because Sven is out doing bureaucrat gang stuff. So, I'm here with Alex, and Borzoi will be the haunting voice in the background for this show. Welcome to everybody.
You sure you don't?
Oh God,
sure you don't
no!
Want
please,
the talking duck.
No! Oh my God! No!
Do the dog. Do it. Do it.
No, please.
It would be actually would be very distracting.
What is going on?
It's not distracting.
Yeah, no, it's incredibly distracting. Particularly
I think
when
it's fascinating.
First of all, we're not doing that. What's that shit called? That
VTuber,
VTube stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I always get things weird. Like I'm always like I'm actually kind of in a way like a boomer of sorts. Or maybe you know, not like a maybe like an Xer. I'm kind of like actually an Xer.
You know, Borzoi, I'm something of a boomer myself.
Yes, it's true. Because I see things like VTube, and I'm just like. I don't know. I'm actually like fundamentally,
bro,
it fundamentally breaks my perceptions of like what people are capable of. Because I look at it, I'm like, this needs to be gassed like right away. Like this needs to be removed.
Physically. I'm a core millennial. I'm not on any cusp. I'm a core millennial,
okay.
And I'm into weird stuff, and I find this bizarre and alienating.
Yeah, I mean, I see VTube, and I'm like, yeah, people that are into that should not be allowed near children.
What's this like core millennial distinction? Millennials between 1981 and 1996.
He's right in the right at the meat of that.
Right, yeah,
right it's because right like the fat middle part.
Because like my parents are extremely late boomers. In fact, my mom could arguably be an Xer, but she identifies with the baby boomer generation. They're cuspers. They actually even made like a sub-generation for them called Generation Jones. So there's some people like Jesse, you know,
y.
Who kind of.
Why are they called Generation Jones? Because they were going to drink
up
a bunch of Kool-Aid and kill themselves?
Yeah,
like
that's literally what Mike said. Keeping up with the Joneses, basically.
Oh.
Generation Jones is actually a little bit more conservative than their older siblings from core boomers because
now
they
it's just Generation Alex Jones like that's like his core audience demographic probably too. That's like his core age that he hits.
Yeah, probably.
Generation Alex Jones. All right, that's a note. Somebody take notes.
Oh, let me do it. I got it.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never heard of Generation Jones before, but I'm willing to go with it. Anyway, so a lot to talk about today. Actually, we don't have much to talk about today, but we'll manage to fill the time. But yesterday, a lot of people were asking me, oh man, there's my browser window. Let me, I'm going to have to set up the browser window so people can see it in the video. That's fine. No big deal. But lots of people were asking me, they were like, Mike, what's your take on this video of this the stabbing of this activist guy, this Ryan Carson, who was, as we all know, killed by that nigger. His name was Brian Carson Daly. Brian Darlington or something like that. Anyway, he was which is a funny name for a black. It's not really a real nigger name, but you know.
Brian Dowling.
Right. So they caught him yesterday. They got him at his apartment, and he is 18 years old.
Hmm.
He had a job. He worked at a school. They're not saying what the job was. They're not saying what he did there. I wonder. Was he just giving?
But wasn't he part of like a learning to work program or something?
Yes.
Oh, maybe something like that.
Alex is correct. He was. I had the. I'm pulling up the article right now, but I remember reading about it. And that woman who was saying, I'm so sorry, was I think his girlfriend, essentially, or it was somebody who knew him.
Yes. It was the black guy's girlfriend.
Right.
I'm so sorry person. And this is what I wanted to kind of explain now that it's kind of clear what everything happened was. Or who all the players were. Let me get the video. I'm so sorry.
Like the fucking pit bull got off the leash and like ate somebody's. I'm so sorry. Oh man.
That's basically what it is. I mean, that really is what is going on here. So let me.
I'll tell you, Mike. I was confused too when I heard that voice because you expect more of the black cadence, the black accent. Yeah.
And
when
that,
you hear
all
that.
Of this makes sense to me once I've stepped back and looked. So let's watch it again. I've got it here. I can't really expand it. Well, I guess I could expand it further, but whatever.
It's so wild.
Yeah. So, the most annoying thing is like the conservative giving like self defense tips. That is so irritating to me. Like I've seen that so often. Like basically critiquing like his defense technique. Like his, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
it's just annoying. It's just like, dude,
yes.
You would be killed in this situation too. Here's my one critique. When you see this nigger walk past stomping like that, and this is actually, you know, Ock Nation and I were like always on the same wavelength, you know, because I was listening to his live stream where he was talking about it, and he had to keep correcting dumbasses that came in with bad takes. And doing things like talking about like the fighting style and things like that. But him and one other guy who actually was from New York had the right take, which is like, when you see this guy stomp by like that, get up and walk the other way. Preferably cross the street. Like cross to the next street corner over. Don't do that. That's the dumbest thing you can do. Getting up and following him. And here's the thing. They actually didn't do that because of their ideology. I'm convinced of this. They saw that he was a black guy who was actually threatening, and they declined to do the smart white people thing or anybody thing, because, you know, Asians, Mexicans, even other blacks in New York City seeing a nigger doing that would know, walk the other way, right? But they didn't. And they didn't do that because of ideology. I think that much is obvious. But people were very puzzled by the behavior of the girlfriend after the fact. So she's standing there. And here's the part in question.
I'm so sorry.
Right. So that sounds like, the I'm so sorry doesn't sound like a black girl. Or it does, but it doesn't sound like a hood black girl, right? It sounds actually a middle class black girl. Then we see. Let's see. Then here's the other behavior in question.
Are you? Are you doing planting? Go watch him. Go watch him.
So this is what people find most puzzling. Is the go watch him stuff, right? People find that really weird. And I have an explanation for that. And I have an explanation for both things. One is that these people, these blacks in this part of Brooklyn, and like that black girl, and if you look at her, she has like a big afro and she's wearing kind of like trendy clothing. She's not actually dressed super like niggishly. That she's kind of like probably mixes somewhat with white hipsters. And so that's why she talks like that. And the girl being super calm and being like, go watch him, go watch him. She went into like, I don't know how else to say this. She went into like white savior mode, for lack of a better term. In that she still saw the sort of like black guy behaving badly as like a problem for her to solve. Like she's now going into like managing the situation mode. She's actually detached. She doesn't really give a shit about the dead guy. She's actually now worried we have to get this black that's going crazy out of control, because if we don't do it, then racists are going to come in and do it.
Right.
That's how she's thinking, and that's why she's so calm like that. Because that is a very strange demeanor to have. To be like concerned about.
Well, she is black. I mean, seeing a person brutally murdered in front of her is not going to phase her.
No, I'm not talking about the black girl. I'm talking about the guy's girlfriend. I'm talking about the white girl.
She's just in shock. Yeah, she's
Claudia Morales.
No, she's not. Yeah. She's not in shock. She's the one who's both, very calmly telling the black girl to go and watch her boyfriend.
Well, I think both can be true, basically, she's in shock, but she's going into basically that activist mode as well. I mean,
she's going
to be honest, if she was just standing there, but with in that shock, I wouldn't have. I don't think as many people would have found the reaction as odd and bizarre, because people can understand, like, there's a lot just happened just now. But it's the fact that she kind of goes into like this activist mode immediately after is what people found extremely puzzling. So you have both the unemotional aspect and then I must do this thing, which
she went into like unusual. Manager mode, right? So that's what's strange. Like, if she was literally standing there in shock, you know, it's understandable to be like, okay, yeah, like, I don't think that her, like, overly calm reaction is something to be criticized, because she doesn't know what the fuck's going on. But then she shows that she's got a sort of situation, she actually has situational awareness, that she's actually giving commands. You know, it's strange, and I've seen it before. This is what I call it, like, white girl manager mode, for lack of a better term, even if that could be interpreted as anti-white. But it's not all white women do that. In fact, most don't. It's a particular thing that activists like this, that anti-racist people, that libtard, and particularly the type of libtards that put themselves in situations around blacks constantly, they're like this. I've seen it my whole life. I have family members that are like this. I've known people that are like this, where, like, the overriding, like, we have to sort of control blacks for their own benefit, takes over everything. That was her main imperative at the time. That's my analysis. I could be wrong. That's how I'm reading it.
I've seen a variant of it in the corporate world. It's not it doesn't express itself in the exact same way, but that attempt to have it in a voice of authority and dictating, I've seen that as well,
right,
among women within the corporate world.
Right. No, yeah. It's like, you know, it's also definitely kind of a woman thing. I could see the dude, if his girl had been stabbed. I mean, I wonder what kind of behaviors we would have gotten out of that spectacle if it had gone the other way. But I don't know. I mean, it's hard to explain, and it's a product of not seeing yourself as a normal member of the public. Like, these people inherently see themselves as managers, because they are, and that's what their activism has sort of made them, like, volunteer for, is to be, they want to be social managers of the population, and
Well, you see this as well in the, because you're not on Twitter, so you don't see this stuff, but, you know, I have had my feed inundated with this, where basically, because they have nobody to blame but themselves, really, for where their ideology has led. They cannot find any other excuses. And so, of course, right-wing personalities on Twitter are enjoying this. And the reactions range from just pointing out the facts to just outright laughing and making memes about it. And people who are sympathetic to Ryan Carson, libtards, left-wingers, whatnot, are extremely upset. And they're now more upset about the right-wing reaction to it than the actual murder.
Yeah, like, that's always going to happen. It's always going to happen. But yeah, did you have more there?
Oh, yeah, but that's basically, I mean, like, just that's to reify your point there, is they see themselves as having to manage a population that's basically on the, as you said before, like, these people genuinely believe and fear that if people become aware of race, they're just going to go straight up wanting to cleanse the cities and kill black people.
Right. Like, that's... Right.
So sort of them trading their lives to preserve that blindness is essential. Like, they're on board with that.
Yes.
Like, they will make the human sacrifice if need be.
Yes, it seems so. Yes, they
seem. So, like, don't be surprised. People have always been like this. They're willing to die for their religion.
It's hard to, yes, that basically lots of, like, religious zealots, generally you're going to get a crop of them that are willing to, you know, die for, like, the jihad or whatever. But it's hard to explain this to normal people. People that didn't grow up in an extremely libtarded household, how this works. Now, I don't think every libtard is like this, but there's degrees of it. But these people lived in Bed-Stuy. You know, they were right in the thick of, like, super activism in New York City. So they were, like, top level janissaries for the system. They were, like, top level managerial class people, right?
He got a eulogy from Chuck Schumer.
Yeah, yes. He's got the governor I think the governor, the mayor, and the senator have all said something, and yeah, they're all saying it. And on some level, you know, Andy and Go is out there. They're making a thing like, oh, police, he hated cops, but cops arrested his killer. And it's like, yeah, okay. But here's the other thing, and this is my critique of the right wingers, not for laughing about it. I understand laughing about it, but what are you laughing about? Can you explain it? You know? I want to know what you're laughing about. Because
wokeness kills you.
Well, is that what it is? And what's funny is even on even some of the people on Ock Nation were like getting some things wrong, and it's always funny when he corrects them because they're like actually not quite racist enough. But they were like, and I, sometimes I wonder when I hear some of the white guys that, because I did watch his stream on this because I was heavily interested in what they were going to say. Some of the white guys that jump in on his stream like are basically just like conservatives who have acknowledged that, yes, I'm racist against blacks, but they don't quite understand actually how things work. So they're like, you know, I wonder if these people are, you know, sitting there thinking, because one guy said the reason the girl was in shock is because she was sitting there thinking, like, oh my God, everything those right wingers said is true. And I wanted to be like, what did the right wingers say? What right wingers said it to her?
This guy's Twitter account apparently was Death Cab for Cohen.
Yeah, had two. He had like that's what Andy and Go was showing.
Death Cab for Cohen.
I don't understand it either because I'm not sure what he's talking about.
What is that? What does it mean?
Well, he's got a picture of Milhouse there too. Well, I don't get it.
So he's making a. I don't know why he chose Cohen specifically for that, but there was an indie rock band.
We know about.
Well, I've listened to Death Cab for.
Yeah, we all know about the band.
I don't live in Cave.
I don't know why
we're not like.
Okay, sorry. I'm talking to a bunch of boomers here. I don't know.
Death Cab for Cutie was actually popular in, like, my time. Like, when I lived in New York City, people were into Death Cab for Cutie. That's, like, when that was going on. But
okay,
yeah.
Fair. That was a dumb thing of me to say. I'll take the L on that one.
In this case, it's not so much soul meets body, it's soul left body.
Yeah, no, I'm on... yeah. What I want to know is like who's the Cohen? Because the picture is Milhouse. So what's going on there? Is he doing an anti-Semite? I doubt it. I highly doubt that. But he had his official account, and then he had the Death Cab for Cohen account, which is kind of actually a funny name, frankly. But he then
it sounds like one of our guys would come up with, to be honest. Yeah, I kind of did a double take.
But then he would be like amplifying shit. Like he would like say his true feelings. So he would report news with his main, and then he would respond to himself with his alt, and be like when they're burning police stations, like this is awesome.
Maybe he's an extreme philo-Semite. Maybe that's.
I'm sure that he is.
Because that's the thing. I don't know who's going through his Twitter account, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was stuff on there that that conservatives have intentionally omitted because it might get. I know that's all speculative on my part. I have no idea, but I wouldn't be surprised if they were curtailing, like just making sure, like that things that would help. Our talking points, like pointing out philo-Semitism.
I think what they're doing, I don't think they're even that astute. I think what they're doing is they're just looking for things where he goes after cops or conservative personalities.
Yeah, they're looking for the easy.
And that's
basically.
Just easy. That's easy stuff. So Rush Limbaugh dies, and he's like, LOL, right? And then, look at this. He hated cops. So that's all they were looking for. The other stuff is too sophisticated.
And the reason why I say this is because like this guy was obviously very smart and very ideological. So
right, so he's going to know a lot of stuff.
I would be very curious what else he was saying on that account.
Yeah,
stuff
I'm assuming
that basically
it's
doesn't
shut down now.
Well, a lot of the stuff they had to pull from because I think it was like the account was like gone or is protected or something, and they had to go through. They had to pull it from Internet Archive. Really, they had to do the Wayback Machine to be able to pull a lot of those.
Oh, okay.
Tweets out.
Right. So yeah, maybe it was. Maybe he had gone. He might have done the bit of like gone into protected mode when Elon Musk got the platform or whatever. You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. But I think the thing is, it's like. With the idea that some people had that like they sat there saying that they sat there saying to themselves maybe like the conservatives were right or something like that. It's sort of like or that the girlfriend was thinking that. It's like, well, she might have been thinking something like that, but she wasn't thinking like the because what have the conservatives said about this? What conservative says that blacks are responsible for crime or that blacks are violent and dangerous? They don't say that. So that's sort of funny how people manage to project that onto them. And what's more likely would be that they maybe in their own mind had an image of what conservatives were like that wasn't accurate. But like, that's why I would love to go on that stream sometime and, you know, just own some of these guys with some of this stuff. Like, what are you talking about? What conservatives ever said anything that would have prevented this?
Well, that's the thing as well. A lot of these people invest in conservatism or being conservative as an identity. And the way they think is they think people on the other side view them as conservatives. They think the conservatives. That's not how they think, though.
No, they look at you as white people.
Yeah. Yeah, you're a racist white person. You're a Nazi. Right. You're a white supremacist. That's right. How they view you. They don't think like, oh, that's the conservative. Right. Oh no, the conservatives.
They literally make their enemies. Yeah. I mean, some of the people that make conservatives their enemies are like the equivalent of like boomer. They're like the boomer libtard equivalent of like boomer conservatives. They're the people that are like constantly watching like the Kevin McCarthy hearings and shit like that, and like glued to the set with like the Donald Trump trials and shit like that. But even they them.
I was going to say, they might say the right or the far right, but again, that's all lumped in with like you're the racist white supremacist Nazi. Yeah. They lump all that together. They don't make this category of conservatives and think of people as conservatives.
Right. And if there was anybody that was thinking like, what if they were right? It was probably Ryan Carson as he died, and he probably wasn't thinking about conservatives. He's probably thinking about us, if anything.
No, I don't think he was thinking about much except the enormous amount of blood leaving his body.
Probably thinking, I'm dying. I'm going to die.
He's probably thinking, he's probably thinking, like, is this it? Is this really where? Because people, when they're dying, they do tend to have like an assessment of their life. But they don't think it tends to be very visceral. It's like, is this all that it was? Is this over? Is it it?
Yeah, yeah. I'm assuming
unless they come to like a certain peace of mind.
I mean, I have no idea what happens, and it's like I don't really want to find out anytime soon. But yeah, that's presumably.
You know what we could do today?
What's that?
We could add James Carlson.
We could. I didn't think of that. We already have three, but if you'd like to add him, you could go ahead and add
him. He said he could come on.
Well, add him. Can you add him?
Well, if I can add him, I can try.
I think you should be able to add. I just made some dumb group, so you should just be able to add him to the group.
Let me make sure
he throws off our whole grid here, but yeah. Anyway, that's sort of my take on that, and that's like my explanation of that. And having lived, I mean, I have actually the real lived experience to be able to speak to this because I come from a very liberal family, and I lived at one point in not in Bed-Stuy, but I did live in Brooklyn around a lot of people like this. And
the conservative reaction to this is what I think is just terror management. It's like, well, I couldn't die like that. I would self defense or something. Yes, there's no way this could happen to me.
Yes, no, that's very good. That's very true. Yeah, they're like coming the copes. In a way, that's a lot of what is behind conservative copes when a conservative desire to individualize these incidents, right? Oh well, look, I would know better than to have that dorky stance and like body check the guy with, you know, like push his chest and like, you know, I would have a better fighting form than that. It's like, one, you probably wouldn't. Or like, I would definitely have a gun. It's like, well, no, you wouldn't.
Yeah.
But like, because you'd be in New York City and that would be illegal for you to be.
You wouldn't have a gun. And then also, even if you did have the gun, then assuming you got it out and used it, then you probably would go to jail for a long time.
Yeah, and you would be actually, you would be stigmatized as a racist for doing it because you would be accused of instigating the confrontation when because apparently what happened was the guy started kicking like scooters and cars and shit and they actually said something to him like, hey man, chill out.
You know, so the one thing I would say about a conservative, they probably wouldn't engage in the first place.
Here's the actual truth. 99% of people, probably more than that, would actually get up when they saw that nigger walk past like that, storm past like that, and disregard them. They would breathe a sigh of relief. They would wait till they thought he was far enough away, and they would get up and walk the other direction in an attempt to not catch his eye. I know this because I've done shit like that before. I have.
I mean, I feel like maybe this Ryan Carson guy, like he felt like it was his community or something.
He did. He legitimately, actually, this is where conservative, some of the conservative people I've seen commenting are correct. His ideology actually got him, was why they got up, followed the nigger, and then said something like, why are you doing that? Or you should stop or relax, man. What are you doing? Yeah. They actually did do nigger savior shit. But the problem is, again, I'm actually interested. Like, we can laugh at them and being dumb or whatever. And it's true that most people probably could have gotten out of that situation alive simply by walking the other way. Which is, that's when I saw the tape, when I first saw the tape on I think it was after Strike and Mike on Tuesday, the tape came out and we watched it after we were done with the show. So and as soon as I saw that nigger storm past, as soon as I saw him walking towards them on the bench, I was like, this is it. He's going to just accost them, and it's going to be over. But that didn't happen. And I was like, oh, shit. And then I saw him get up and follow him, walk the same way. I was like, are you fucking stupid? Like, that was my reaction. Because I've been in that position before, where you see a nigger who's, like, ready to go, you know, walking, like, he'll be, like, bumping people, you know, if there's, like, people on the sidewalk. And it's like, stay out of his way, stay out of his eyesight, hope to not catch his notice and just go the other way. And that's what, like, everyone in New York knows to do that. Even a lot of libtards. So this was this very much was an ideologically driven interaction by them. And it got out of hand. And, of course, the girl never stopped being in community management mode. That's why the whole, like, go watch him, go watch him. You know, so anyway, very strange thing. Anyway, what is James? Are you here?
Oh yes, I am. I was laughing because I remember watching the video and having the same exact thought. This, like, you know, doing the typical sort of plod walk, and the guy was 18 or whatever, walks by, and I'm like, why are you not? Number one, get up. Number one, walk the opposite direction. I was like yelling at my computer screen, like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
It was so weird to me, and you're right, and I had never thought of it until you just said it, Mike, that his response of getting up and following the guy was 100% ideologically driven. He did that because he felt it was the right thing to do.
Yeah. Also,
and that set the guy off, because in the you look at the transcript basically of what happened, the guy was like screaming at Carson, like, why are you staring at me? Approaching him set an already highly agitated Negro state just set off that threat detector within him.
They could have walked the other way, like, and they'd be like, definitely, no question.
Let's see, you got a text description of how the pit bull was described by other friends of the pit bull.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. But I want to also say this, that, like, there's two things going on with the deciding to follow him. It's also that, like, they know very well. Their instincts told them, at least I'm assuming this, okay, maybe I'm projecting here, to get up and go the other way. And they had to override their lizard brain instinct to avoid danger, obvious signs of danger there. Everyone can see them. Everyone can read the body language, see how he was walking, and be like, breathe a sigh of relief that he walked by and disregarded you. Like a lot of people, most people, even libtards in New York City would simply read the tea leaves and walk away the other way and actually live, you know, unless maybe he caught. But if he caught, if you're like a full city block away and you catch his attention, like, you just keep walking and he'll actually lose interest. It's true. It's happened to me before too, that kind of thing, where they will yell maybe if you catch their attention. Just keep walking. Don't turn. Don't react. Just keep moving. They probably won't chase you. And if they do, like, if you've already got a block distance between you, unlikely that they'd be willing to chase you down that far, unless there's some real...
It is like dealing with
some kind of animal. Yeah, no, it is. It really is. And
one of the scariest experiences I had in the last couple of years, I was walking around downtown Detroit, and I was ignoring this black homeless guy.
Oh, God.
Whatever he was.
Yeah, okay, mistake number one.
You don't need to ignore me. Like, he started screaming at me for not looking at him. I really thought I might get like attacked at that point. I was able to put enough distance, and he didn't follow. But it was one of those split second moments. Like, oh my God, am I about to become one of these statistics?
Yeah. The one thing that the one thing that's good about being able to keep some get distance between yourself and them is that, particularly on a crowded city street, if not busy because it's the middle of the night, but there's a lot of stuff around. So there's other targets of opportunity, right? Like there's cars, there's scooters, there's trash cans. There's street signs. There's storefronts. There's a bunch of shit he could fuck with, you know, like in between you and him. So, yeah. But they are consciously overriding their lizard brains, their actual knowledge that this is dangerous and I shouldn't do this for ideological reasons, and then actually encountering him, interacting with him. That's all purely ideologically driven. And
there's another aspect to it, too, and I'm going to white knight here for a minute. Oh, boy. His girlfriend, if you watch the video, she followed him because he's the man and he was going first. He was leading the way. Like, he literally led her into that. You know, yes. I am gonna white knight a little bit. If she had been alone, the minute that guy passed her, she would have been up and gone the other direction.
Yeah.
She followed her boyfriend into that situation, and he died because of it, and she's lucky he didn't die.
Well, she's lucky she didn't die, but you also, I don't know if you heard you didn't hear my previous analysis, there would be no way for you to do it, which is that her her giving commands to the black girl, who was the guy's boyfriend, that apparently they were fighting and that's why he was angry. And so the black girl with the white girl accent, who's like, "I'm so sorry. Are you okay?" Like, that's what she said. And I've known black girls when I lived in Brooklyn that talk like that. And they talk like that because of the intermingling in that community with white hipsters and blacks. And she's probably not a poor black person. She probably came from a middle class background, particularly because she had a big afro and was wearing trendy clothing. She wasn't dressed like, she wasn't a big fat Shaniqua nigger. You know, she wasn't.
Yeah. I thought they both did. I thought the Brian kid also was middle class.
I think that's probably true too. Yeah, which is shows.
All right, I haven't.
Yeah.
Go ahead, I have the note here. White Knight papers. That's added to the notes.
White Knight papers. White Knight papers. Very good. Yes.
Great.
Yes.
My reputation is gone. But I just trashed it.
Well, we're all White Knights here at TRS. But the way I'm not White Knighting for her is that I saw her, like, if she was simply just standing there in shock, I would be fully White Knighting. Well, not maybe fully, because she's still, frankly, piece of trash, like libtard Antifa Castiza broad, but her like giving commands to the black girl is so typical. It's so, I can't tell you how many flashbacks of people I've known in my life that are exactly like that and would probably react exactly the same way in the same situation, which was to immediately take charge, be like the manager of the situation, and like give commands to people. Like, she's more concerned about like getting the wild nigger under control in case like cops come. I will bet you that's what it is on some level. Watch him.
Should be.
Because the police are going to come. There's no way to avoid it. Because if she's going to have to, I mean, what is she going to do? I'm assuming she called 911. I mean, do we know that even? Did she even do that?
Yes. Yeah, she okay. did. Because there was a lot of misinformation and rumors that were going around after this happened.
Did she refuse to call 911?
Yeah, that she like refused to describe the suspect to the police, but their friends of them have said, because you know they were so ass mad about what was going on Twitter that a lot of people came out to basically try and correct the record for the sake of Ryan.
I'm totally willing to believe that she didn't give a description to the cops.
Well, she apparently, their friends say that she did, but
I think they might be lying because the police did.
It could be.
The police were actually saying that she didn't. They were saying they had no description. And it wasn't until the security camera footage was released that they had the description. So they're probably fucking lying. Description is,
it was a man in a learn to work program.
Yeah, dude. I don't know. We'll never really know the truth. But people coming out and saying that she did it doesn't jive with the police saying the next day they had no description until the security camera footage was released on Tuesday night. So between
the way.
For 24 hours plus, they did, for like, you know, a little bit over 24 hours, they didn't have a description.
The way the media has been approaching this has been interesting because you have different reactions. New York Daily News really let the family of the murderer kind of say whatever they wanted. It's actually kind of wild considering that, I don't know, it's just.
It's not
they call, well, they call dude. This. It's not surprising, but you would think because like there's been some quarters of it that really want to make sure that this guy gets punished because like this was a useful functionary, but they can't let go of how they normally report things.
They're facing a contradiction here. which is that, like, this guy killed a regime loyalist, a functionary, and a manager, a member of the managerial class for their regime. And so they need to have, and it's not that they give a shit about him, right? They don't care. If they could be confident that nothing, that people, nobody else would care, like, or that this wouldn't affect, like, recruitment, so to speak, or this wasn't going to hurt their ability to get more people like him, because that's the problem. It's not that they care about him. It's they're like, are we going to still be able to recruit people into being like that? Because this is going to make it harder. This is going to make it less attractive to be the type of person he was, right?
Especially when right wingers are getting a good laugh out of it, which really makes
you don't upset. You don't want to be one. Have your whole have the whole ideological thing that you support be brutally proven to be objectively incorrect, and then have the opposition, the people that you are tasked with suppressing, laughing at your expense. That's just bad. It's people are not going to sign up for that. They're signing up for the prestige. So he's dead at age 32. And two, all that prestige is out the fucking window because he's a joke. Because people fucking hate these people.
Yeah, because now he's a teachable moment for the other side.
Yeah, it's bad all around.
His death is literally just a teachable moment.
It's bad all around. And even them, like, very quickly arresting the guy, getting him charged with the maximum charges he could face, which is, I think he's getting charged with, like, first-degree murder or something like that and a couple other things. So all that is, like, even that doesn't really help. And now even then you get people being like, oh, the police that he hated went out there. Like, Andy Ngo was out there saying that shit, right? But yes, I think the thing they're most worried about is the recruitment aspect of it. And that's why they are moving to quickly round this guy up.
So the recruitment aspect of it, I have a bit on that. A lot of city and state governments are already struggling. 20% of city jobs in Baltimore are vacant because no one will take them. No one wants to live in Baltimore. Right. You go to Coeur d'Alene and Idaho, they have a glut of people who want to work for the city government.
There you go.
It's the same thing. San Diego, city government shortages. New York City has horrible city government shortages. But, you know, if you go to Harrisburg, anyone will live in Harrisburg.
In Pennsylvania?
Oh, no, wait.
Harrisburg's rough. Yeah,
actually, are you sure about that? I'm not saying
Harrisburg's pretty rough, man.
I'm not saying, like, it's dangerous, which it might be, but it's just dingy. It's just like a scrubby city. It's just an ugly place. But, yeah, anyway.
Point being, this is a real thing, and they're struggling. Yeah. Universities are struggling. Stony Brook University has a big...
Now, State College, I could see having a glut of people wanting to work for the government. That's a nice town. But Harrisburg, ugh. Anyway, press forward.
Point being, they're having a very hard time getting people to getting their own functionary class to actually live in the areas necessary to govern the country.
And he was one of, like, the last holdouts.
Yeah. I mean, all of the people he represents who are still in New York City are now looking at homes outside of Manchester, New Hampshire. Yeah. That's what they're doing.
All those people who put up a GoFundMe so they can do self-care. Which is actually true, by the way. His friends put up a GoFundMe, not for, like, funeral costs, but so they can take time off work and do self-care. What that really means is, like...
They call themselves working class.
Yeah, working class people. Yeah, get the fuck out of here. What that really means is look for homes, in Long Island or... Well, actually, probably not. Actually, probably, like, Maine.
Vermont.
It means smoke weed and fight right-wingers on Twitter all day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, look, I'm doing self-care. I'm finding a house in Burlington.
Yeah, exactly. this is a serious problem. And it's remarkable to me that they have trained that, you know, I've mentioned it before going to university. They have trained this entire class of completely unoriginal system apparatchiks who are completely loyal to them. But the preservation instinct still wins out most of the time. It didn't in the case of...
Yeah, I can't remember. He's a particularly rare one.
Brian Carson.
Yeah.
But the rest of them, man, they're running for the literal hills.
Right.
Well, I wonder if one of the reasons why the animal instinct didn't take over as well was because they had come from a wedding. He might have had a couple of drinks. I've been in that mode before where
that guy's,
you do stupid shit.
Maybe.
Nah, it was ideological.
It was ideologically driven. But real quick, I'm going to interrupt this conversation. If you find this conversation interesting, then please, and you're listening to the free version of the podcast, please go to therightstuff.biz/paywall and get a subscription. This is a completely listener-supported network. We have great minds like James Carlson and helping us out, and we need your help to continue to bring this podcast to you. So everyone has to shill the podcast now for all the people listening to the free fag version. And those of you that are already subscribed, hey, you can donate to TRS or you can donate to NJP at rightstuff.biz/paywall or at nationaljusticeparty.com. We literally cannot do this without you people. And you're not going to hear the kind of news, opinion, analysis, and worldview stuff anywhere else than here.
Right. Correct. We are the only type of podcast like this that I think currently exists. I don't know if anything remotely close to us. We're all that's left, and we depend on user support.
Yeah.
Not any. There's absolutely nothing like the network that is not related to the network. Right. I mean, I have my two shows, but even the White Papers podcast is still, I'm still attached to the network. Like, everything is sort of within this bubble.
Yeah.
This is where you get our politics.
Yes.
You can't go anywhere else.
We actually are working class white people.
Yeah, that's true. I'm a poor college student, damn it.
Yeah. Well, in Alex's case, he's probably not even, he's probably even like lower middle class. No, I'm joking.
I'm just poor. I'm just poor.
I don't know, Alex. I saw the manor Alex lords over from his front porch.
That's one way of putting it. But yeah.
What did I call him? Discount Southern aristocrat.
He's just a borderlander. He's a scuffed aristocrat. I'm writing that down.
He's a scuffed landowner. Yeah. But yeah, no, it is true, and not to belabor the point, but we can't do this without the listeners. We've always like neglected to do this type of shilling before because it feels like, you know, people don't want to be bothered by it, but we need you guys to keep everything going. So just get a subscription. And yes, we know it's irritating because you can't use credit cards, but you can
use credit cards if you go to if you absolutely have to use the credit cards, you can go to Uncle Sven again on Odyssey.com. You can make a donation there. Just follow the instructions from the paywall. It doesn't have to be during one of Sven's live streams because he can see it. The transaction still goes through. He'll still have the copy of it. All you got to do is follow the instructions of the paywall for Odyssey donations. Email the receipt and the order number to TRSWrestleMania@protonmail.com, and you can set up if you absolutely have to use a credit card, you can set up a subscription that way.
Otherwise, you can use Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Dogecoin, or Monero, or you can mail us a money order. And now back to the conversation. Now that this is going to be the part of the video where there's like a big lump. Like, everyone skipped this part. But yeah, back to the conversation. What the hell were we talking about? I forgot.
Functionaries don't want to live.
Yes.
Don't want to live in the cities of the system they're supposed to run, and they're running away.
Right. And they had a rare case where this guy seemed to be very ideologically dedicated to the cause. And like, there's a tendency sometimes amongst, I think, right-wingers to think that on some level, you know, because when you look at Jews, you see that these people are adaptive power strategists, and they're not particularly necessarily invested in some of the things that they're saying. This is actually for them; they are strategizing. They're like, this is what we want you to think, because that way we retain power. But that's not true for people like Ryan Carson. He was a true believer, and his girlfriend, on some level, was a true believer. And this is what happens. And look, it's really bad. It's a bad look for the whole system when somebody who deeply believes in it dies brutally, is literally filleted, is literally sliced apart, like cut to bits.
It's increasingly a bad look when you have this kind of thing constantly happening in every metropolitan area in the United States.
Yes. But in this case, it's even more so because it's like, This could have been avoided with a little bit of, frankly, like street smart. He could have done, frankly, what any black person would have done.
Right.
Do what the black people would have done. They would have all run away too. Any nigger would have run away too.
Either they would have run away, or they would have helped him break into the or they would have shot him.
Or they would have gotten into a conversation and killed the other nigger. Right. So
they would have seen him walking down the street all huffy and puffed up and went, "Oh man, there's a nigger moment coming. I'm getting out of here.
No, for real. Like the average frankly, the average black in that area probably would be like, "Oh shit, no, not tonight," and just like walk
yeah.
away. Yeah, not tonight.
Yeah, nah.
It's also an extremely bad look. Man. It's also an extremely bad look when the hammer, the system does not come down and on the side, full force on the side of its functionary class.
Yeah.
It causes people to, people to go into that to doubt if there's going to be any, because no matter what people say, they want some level of security. They want some level of being able to be backed up when necessary. When that right. when you're left all alone out there, no matter what your service is, it's going to make the you're always going to have your true believers and your ideologues. It's going to make the squishier members second guess what if this is even worth it. Because
getting rid of cops isn't actually a popular idea. Like it's not. Right. I mean, I think James will back me up on this.
No, it's never been.
That's a very fringe opinion.
Number one, the people who want more cops and want more cops. I mean, when you look at the opinion polling in some parts of America, black people want cops on like every street corner. They right. want to like walk down a street and have a cop within view because they don't want to get shot. But regardless of racial group, it is extremely it's an extremely small fraction of the population that wants to get rid of police. Policing is incredibly popular, and quite frankly, so is pretty, let's say, forceful policing.
Right, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like, kick down the door, waving the 4-4 type policing is actually what people want. People want, doors busted down and people dragged off to fucking prison. And they want police to go at these people with billy clubs in the street when they
were. In 1975... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, even stop and frisk is popular when you don't call it stop and frisk.
Right.
Like, if you give someone just the explanation, you don't use the term, people are like, "Oh, yeah, hell yeah, that's a great idea."
Having cops stop, suspicious characters just because and just pat them down. Yeah, and we've also done the bit about how, like, relative to actual crime, white people were vastly overprofiled by stop and frisk. Because white people commit, like, maybe 1%, if that, of the crime in New York City, and they were like 20% of stop and frisk.
you gotta balance out the statistics.
So
in 1975, there was this survey done for the Radical Center by Donald I. Warren. This is the study that they were basically studying, why did Northern voters vote for George Wallace? And this is where the term the Middle American Radical came from. And among the questions they asked in that survey is, who would you like to have violence done against in order to preserve the American way of life? 10% of Middle American radicals said whoever, everyone. That's how fed up in the chaos of the 1970s. Like, just do violence against everyone until this gets sorted out. Mm-hmm. So if that's like, and that's 10%. Obviously, it was higher. The percentages were higher for much more specific groups of people that they wanted to see violence done against.
What a strange question to ask people. Yeah.
Well, they want to know why were these people
kind of getting to
George
the point,
Wallace?
Right? It's kind of getting right to the point.
They want to know why are these northern urbanites
voting
for George
Wallace?
The
implication is that the whole point of voting for George Wallace is he's going to just beat the shit out of people that you don't like. Yeah. This is maybe true, but that's what's the government there for? I mean, that's what it's there. That's his job, right?
I grabbed a statistic really quick. 2021, 47% of people want an increase in policing. Only 15% want less.
And what's the rest of people saying is just right?
About the same, yeah.
Which is that's funny, but yeah. But yeah, but the thing is, like, it's not just that this happened to one of their functionaries. It's that it happened to him because he believes in the system ideology. It's highly unpopular. The ideology that is pushed at the top levels of the system, yet it still is a way to get ahead. You know, if you can get prestigious degrees from universities, you can get on the media, you can get a prestigious position writing for a newspaper or something like that, as like a big opinion columnist or something. So the prestige belief system is what this guy had. And that is actually crazy, out there, lunatic, anti-white, Jewish racial theory, Jewish sexual theory, just nonsense, right? And it's not believed by most people. It's highly unpopular. Most people hate it. But, you know, if it's going to, it's one thing if it's like, okay, believing this is going to get you advancement, promotion, you're going to rub shoulders with senators and governors and mayors and like top people, you're going to be getting legislation passed, you're going to be getting praise. Okay, maybe I'll make the deal and go for that. But no, you're just going to get stabbed in the heart in the middle of an empty street in Bedford-Stuyvesant. That's what's going to happen to you. Yeah, then the deal doesn't seem so good. And it's because he believed in it. It's not like, again, a random person, an actual working class person living in New York City, white, black, or whatever, frankly, not to do like the, you know, all races are the same, would have just gotten up and moved. And he didn't. And he didn't because he believed in the system's ideology. That's really important, I think, because it's not just that he's a libtard. The conservatives that are crowing don't quite understand the situation either. Although some of them kind of instinctually get it, and they instinctually get that this ideology is somewhat it's not just that he's a dumb liberal. That's like kind of a framing of like dumb liberals. Yeah, but why? Why are so many people dumb liberals? Well, they're dumb liberals because they're expecting on some level rewards. But the way people's brains work, they don't want to see themselves as like a dishonest piece of shit, so they start believing it. It's a tough, it's kind of a abstract kind of psychological thing. But yeah, the disincentive to be the next Ryan Carson is massive right now. And that's a problem. And it also doesn't really help to have like an immediate police, like get the guy, you know, arrest the guy within 2 days. It's also, here's another thing that's interesting. The nigger wasn't going anywhere. He was at his house, and he still had the same sweatshirt and the same knife inside the apartment. Like, he didn't seem to be too worried that he was going to get caught.
None of them are worried. Nigger. I made this comment to a friend the moment it happened, was that he probably didn't think he'd even ever get caught.
Like, yeah, he probably didn't think he'd ever get arrested.
Everything, yeah. They perceive everything as so much in their favor at the moment. I mean, hell, they can loot any store they want in half the country and yeah. beat people in the street. He probably thought he was scot-free. Like, ah, man, I had to kill that guy in the street. Anyway, like, yeah. I guarantee you he didn't think he was going to get caught.
No, he didn't think so. Because
he was going on with life.
Because he knows people that commit crimes and never get caught.
Yeah.
Like, he's got people. Yeah.
I was going to say, he's also proof that it does, like, socioeconomic status doesn't matter at all. Because it does seem like he's a middle, because he's a junior. He's got the same last name. He's got the same name, full name as his father, who's in his life. And this is the reaction of friends that knew him. Stunned neighbors and friends of the accused murderer described the youth in glowing terms, with one recalling high school graduate as a good kid with a twin sister and a stable family. Like an average normal teenager, close family friend Eric Riddick, 58, told the news. Just like any other teenager. Yeah.
He's not, though. Yeah. If you have to mention the stable family, it's not normal. Right?
Right.
Like, it's not. Like, I mean, again, he's normal for blacks.
He's just his mom and his dad. Can you imagine?
It's like, look, he was just wow, so surprising that this happened because he had a family. Which shows you, you're the whole conservative, it's the parenting thing. No, it's not. There are white people that were raised in completely broken and fucked up family situations. Don't go stabbing people in the middle of the night just because they're pissed off about something. Like, this is, you know, I mean, come on now. Like, how many white people you know that came from a broken home? A lot.
A lot.
Do they go stabbing people in the middle of the night because they're mad at their girlfriend? No.
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 You'd struggle to find an example.
Yeah.
Like an average normal teenager, close family friend Eric Riddick, 58, told the news, just like any other teenager finding his way, coming up as an adult, he was working in construction. We talked a few weeks ago on the block, and he seemed fine. He was a great kid.
Yeah, he was fine. He was totally fine.
Until he wasn't.
Yeah. No, he was fine.
I don't know. If I feel like I'm reading about a pit bull. When I was looking at it, I felt exactly like reading about a pit bull. Like, oh, you know, he never bit anybody.
Yeah. It gets even better. A neighborhood friend recalled playing basketball with the defendant, adding there were never any signs of trouble with Brian. Very, very sweet guy, said. Okay, they didn't put the name in there. I thought so, as did everyone else who knew him. It makes me sick to my stomach. No fucking way it was Brian. And a neighbor of the suspect, declining to give her name, offered a similar upbeat take on the accused killer. Very surprised. I can't believe it, said the woman. I'm just learning right now. He was the sweetest boy.
Okay, I mean, but
he was a good dog until he bit my leg.
Just don't walk by him too fast.
Right? No sudden movements.
Yeah.
Walk don't look him in the eye. He'll take that as a challenge.
Yeah, I'm looking for that, the people saying good things about him. But most of the stuff I'm seeing is just he's getting...
It was in the New York Daily News.
Yeah, this is international news. I've got the Hindustan Times. Who is Brian Dowling and why did he stab activists to death in Brooklyn? Because he's black.
The Indians know that, too.
Oh, yeah. 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 So, yeah, but they seem to just be like, this seems to just be syndicated stuff. But, yeah. But, yeah, anyway, I don't really know what else there is to say about this. I mean, now we wait for the jury nullification. Because I would not be surprised.
I think we beat it to death.
I would not be surprised if he gets jury nullified, if the jury doesn't want to convict him on murder, and if some narrative comes out he was having a mental health episode, it wasn't his fault, and will the family of Ryan Carson and will his girlfriend stand up against that? Probably not. They'll probably just stay silent throughout all of it.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if friends or family basically say, like, ask for mercy in the court for Brian Dowling.
They probably will.
That this is not what Ryan would want. He would not want. He believed in rehabilitative and restorative justice. Yes. Corrective justice.
Yes. Yes. Restorative justice. Which is
restorative
what
justice.
What the hell is that? What, that's fucking retarded. Like, that's, yeah. I mean, it's a. It just means letting black people go. It means like not holding them responsible for crimes. No, I'm a believer in actually punishing people for the sake of punishment. Like, I actually am. Like, people should be, that do bad things should be punished. And they should be punished, frankly, for the satisfaction of society. For people that look and see that this guy did a bad thing, and I feel better knowing that he has suffered something bad himself as a result. Like, that is actually, people are like, oh, that's such a primitive, I don't care. That's a primitive instinct. It's how I feel, and no, that's, and you know.
It's not primitive. I mean, that... One part of the justice system used to be to punish people, of course. I'm not going to deny that there's a punishment aspect. But the main part, it's a policy-making tool. The main point of a punishment system, a prison system, a police system, is that you are showing the population you rule that you're prepared to do what it takes to keep them safe.
Right.
And to some extent, keeping people safe means sort of satisfying that baser need
right.
to see people you dislike punished. Because right. that makes you feel better and it makes you feel safe. That is the primary point of a corrective system.
It makes
system,
you trust
frankly.
The state.
Yeah. Yes.
That's what yeah. that's what Fucko's point like is in discipline and punishment. Yeah, I was going to say, that's Fucko's point in discipline and punish. Yeah. That basically, they did public executions, one, to show the power of the sovereign. It's like, we will find you, we will catch you, we will punish you, and we will do it in front of everybody. But it also, so it sends that, you know, that fear and awe into the population. But if they identify and trust in that sovereign as well, then they know that justice will be done. They get to see it be done.
Right.
Yeah. The point that Foucault is making is that you don't want to be over-punishing or under-punishing. Because both of those could get you in trouble. You definitely don't want to be under-punishing. You don't want to have people running around committing murders, getting away with it, because then the populace will be like, well, what am I getting out of this deal with the sovereign? The sovereign has abdicated his responsibility to take care of me and make sure that my enemies are destroyed.
He would have been supportive of prison abolishment, but he was just describing how power works. He was describing right, yeah. how the because his criticism of the prison system was that it hides this aspect from the population in order to soothe their bourgeois sensibilities and sentiments. That it hides the punishment aspect.
Yeah, because you obfuscate it with the bureaucracy. Like, well, you know, we had programs, and you know, there was an early release thing, and this Negro was out on the street, or whatever the case may be.
You obfuscate it with like the Broomer procedural, right?
Yeah.
Like, but I would say that our system does both. It both over and under. It over punishes whites and under punishes blacks. It's just the essence of anarchist tyranny. We all understand this. Like, look at the January 6th defendants. Look at the Proud Boys. Look at us. We suffer punishments and we haven't even done anything illegal. And we are constantly being monitored and punished and attacked by this system for literally no fucking reason. I mean, the state, it actually, when you step back and think about it, it's quite outrageous how we're treated by not just by private institutions, which the state won't protect us from, but then the state themselves, simply for views and saying things and expressing opinions, which is supposed to be, in this country at least, our right to do. not every country makes that deal with the people, but this one does. At least it presents itself as doing that. And so what the fuck business is it of the FBI? What the fuck I say on the internet? It's not. But yet people are actually have been browbeaten and basically have been beaten down by this totalitarian system enough where they don't necessarily immediately become outraged by it. They might not like it. Some of them like it. Some of them might not like it. But most people accept it passively. And that's pathetic.
That's why they put it on display. For white people, they put the punishment on display to humiliate, to show the power of the sovereign, to say, like, if you even think about doing anything like this, you are going to be dragged through the courts, you are going to be thrown in the gulag, you are going to have your name plastered over every news article.
In the press, right?
Yeah, publicly. Yeah, it's the same. It's very, very similar to the old public execution. And interestingly, I haven't seen sort of as much backlash against that as I would like.
No, I agree with you on that. And that just means it's working.
I never really see anyone make the argument of like, well, why is this being dragged through the international press? Why is this story important enough to do that?
Because they retarded it. I'm going to go on my rant about CRT and all these other trips.
Yeah.
They retarded it with the word cancel culture.
Yeah.
This is cancel culture. No, it's political persecution, damn it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They retarded it with another one of these stupid terms that Fox News repeats ad nauseum all day long. So whenever anything in the world happens that is blatant political persecution, some fucking normie conservative goes, oh my God, cancel culture is so bad. But no, it's political persecution.
Right.
The only people I've heard call this a social execution are some orthodox Marxists on a very small YouTube channel.
Right. No, yeah, no, leftists, like somewhat dissident leftists actually analyze a lot of stuff correctly.
Yeah, because the power relations are so obvious.
Yeah, they might not be willing to bring themselves to talk about the Jewish aspect of it, but they understand how the power functions work. They understand how the levers that are being pulled are operating, which is, again, just that's another problem with conservatives being dumbed down by really stupid media and personalities and not going to college and not getting educated, is that the people that are able to think at a high level and an abstract high level about this stuff and analyze these things and explain to them what is going on aren't. What they're doing is giving them stupid shit. Is they're just telling them dumb shit.
And the origin of a lot of they may not be aware of it, but just because of how these words sound, it has this effect. The origin of a lot of these euphemisms are extremely infantile. Woke comes from Hotep slang. Cancel culture, canceling, comes from K-pop superfans. That's the origin of a lot of these euphemisms.
Yeah, a lot of this stuff comes out of the left. Context. It comes out of, like, the trash left, like the garbage libtards, like we're talking about this stuff. Yeah. And, woke is coming out of, like, you know, black stuff. But, the other thing is just like the way that I James, you had that thing you were studying how, like, the conservative media doesn't even mention the thing that, like, the people that watch it are not even exposed. They're exposed to this shit. But if you watch libtard media, they actually talk more about what's really going on. If you want to explain that.
Yeah. Absolutely. So the example I had, and there are multiple, there's a bunch of stuff on this, but the example I had in one of the articles was The Great Replacement. 65% of people who watch MSNBC or CNN or ABC, all these sort of mainstream, generally accepted to be sort of left of center news programs, they have heard the term Great Replacement. They know what it is. They know what it means. Fox News viewers, it's 35%. Because Fox News literally will not cover it.
They
now,
won't
the
say
interesting,
it. Yeah.
Right. The interesting thing is that when you go to a Fox News viewer and you give them the term and explain it, 85% of them will agree with you. They'll say, "Yeah, no shit, that's what's happening. I've never heard that term. I didn't know, you know, there was any kind of intellectual construction around this, but yeah, well, I agree with you." The thing is, Fox News doesn't cover it. They don't talk about it. This is why they were so furious with Tucker Carlson. Yeah, I know Tucker Carlson's doing dumb, stupid interviews now. That's aside the point. They were so pissed
when he
at Tucker
it up,
Carlson
when he said it,
when
on
he
Fox,
said it
like,
because he went totally around the cordon they've established around the millions and millions of people who still watch Fox News.
But James, wouldn't talking about this be the financially responsible thing to do because people are animated about it and it would probably increase your viewership?
Oh, yeah,
I'm calling this the great replacement of euphemisms.
Yeah, no, it is. It really is. That's the great replacement. And the thing is that it's like there's another aspect of this, which is like, you know, a lot of conservatives, if you look at like the New York Post, for example, we always like to look at the New York Post and look at their commenters because they're actually, frankly, pretty likely to get racist pretty fast. But, you know, a lot of these people will get like if you'll say, you know, OK, so if they understand like a black person is unlikely to face significant consequences for doing horrific crimes. And that if their victim is white. Now, there's other idea here of the idea that conservatives are so afraid of being called racist. And this is something I see some right-wingers do when they are criticizing libtards or sometimes even when they're criticizing like more mainstream conservatives. The idea that they won't do something because they're afraid of being called racist. Now, this raises a couple issues. One... Who are they afraid of? Who are they afraid of? And two, are they really afraid of being called racist? Because I don't think that either side is particularly afraid of being called racist. Libtards don't care when conservatives do. Dems are real racists. Right? However, yeah. White women are terribly afraid, liberal white women and conservative, but liberal too, of being called Karen. Why? Well, because of the power relationship. Because the black woman calling you a Karen has real power over you. The conservative calling you, LOL, Dems are real racist because you're low expectations. There's no power done. That person is beneath you. So you don't care what they say.
Yeah, they can't cancel you.
They can't do anything to you, right? But then conservatives also don't care if they're called racist by libtards because their defense is it's not true. I'm not really a racist, and they're correct. Yeah. And particularly like because the Republican Party really isn't racist, or if they're sticking up for some personality who might be getting attacked, some conservative personality who might be getting attacked by leftists as being a racist or something. But here's my thing: the fact that even if it's not true in a certain case that so and so is a racist or whatever, the fact that that's you know, or the fact that you even say they're afraid of being called it. Well, one, who are they afraid of being called it by? Why are they afraid of being called that, assuming that they are? And also, like, even if you're not a racist, and this is something to say to conservatives or right-wingers who might be listening, like, there's no requirement to be pro-white that you actually, like, hate and want to, like, kill blacks or something like that. That's a meme they put in your head. But here's the thing. If you can see, just like I can see, that, yes, a black person isn't going to be punished for their crimes. A white person will, and a black person is particularly not going to be punished when their victim is white. If you can see that, and you don't have to, like, there's something for you to be angry about, even if you're not, like, hating black people. You see what I mean? Like, it's like, this is something that I feel like isn't really explained to them, where it's like they're just, like, all they want to do is run from the label of racist. And it's like, okay, well, you've done that. And good job, but this keeps happening. So even if you don't want to be pigeonholed as racist, shouldn't you be upset that the system at least is operating on the basis of race and is actually, you know what I mean? It's sort of like, even if you are an anti-racist conservative, like you actually believe that, you should still be active against what the system is doing because it's not acting in an actual anti-racist way. It's acting in a very racial way. If you really believe this, nothing should be based on race, you should still oppose this system because it's obviously basing everything on race. So what, but they just accept it and just be like, oh, well, you know, we just don't operate on the basis of race. Well, you should. At the very least, even you're like, we shouldn't do stuff on race stuff, should activate you to stick up for whites also the same people that say that will immediately jump to accuse white people of racism when there's like a credible attack on a white person for actually being racist. So they're just functionaries in the same fucking system, is I guess the point I'm getting to. And the logic of it shouldn't make sense, but
the distinction they'll make then is that, well, the civil rights act should never be applied to whites. It just shouldn't exist. Wanting to be a counterbalance, if they don't like that things are racial in the system, they don't fight for being an actual counterbalance. They basically just throw up their hands and say, like, well, the system just needs to not do that. And they don't want to. They don't want any kind of actual political force to engage a countervailing ideology.
But then they jump on bandwagons when actual racists are like smoked out, right? So what are you talking about? Like, again, it's basically what conservatives are not afraid of. They're not afraid of being called racist, because what they do is they simply say, oh, well, these dumb libtards making everything about race. And it's like, okay, yes. So what do you learn from that? Right? And the fact is that white people that are tuning into this kind of messaging are being neutered by it, because if they weren't getting that kind of messaging, they would absolutely be up and ready to fight back and push back on the basis of being white. Yeah.
We've all talked about this before. Every system that operates like this, even the Soviet Union, there is always some sort of conservative or conservative-esque faction of people that acts as a break wall between public anger and the system.
Right.
They stand there and they field and they bounce back at all of the people who are pissed off. This is what the conservative movement exists to do.
Right. And the worst thing ever is if you're somebody who actually understands everything we understand and then adapts yourself to the conservative movement. Because then you're just helping.
The people who think they're going to infiltrate, they're going to make friends and infiltrate and change it from the inside. No, it's an immune system.
Yeah, that's because you're fundamentally misunderstanding why it even exists. Because it didn't, right? They would rather.
You're helping the conservatives smoke out people like us. Like, even when you give them the profile and the details, like, oh, I'm going to show them how to do this. They just have more data on who to look out for.
Right. And this is also why that's true, actually. Yeah, you actually assist them in figuring out who they need to really, and the kind of patterns they need to look for. But this is also why there's a constant imbalance in the public media of one side over the other. Why, yes, conservatives are always painted as heels. That's actually part of the strategy. Like, the Finkelthink thing isn't purely just like, it is, I mean, this is something where people say, like, oh, sometimes if they go too far in the one direction, I've said this myself, but I think there's actually a method to it as well. That you don't want to go totally over the deep end where you make it so anybody who's associated with the right in any way, shape, or form is a pariah. That is going to cause a problem. They do need some kind of equilibrium, but they need it to be, the stable equilibrium needs to be the conservatives are still, at least in the mainstream media, the press, the narratives that everyone is getting, they are still mostly playing the heel, because that always puts even people who are being sort of like tricked by this system into the mode of I'm still always the heel. Like, because a lot of times we worry about, okay, so we worry about, like, okay, people that have our beliefs sometimes secretly maybe have a guilty conscience about it because of all the messaging they've been given. They sometimes think maybe I am sort of doing something bad. Well, that's also been programmed into them just by being a right winger, just by even if they came out of the Republican Party, even if they were a Republican at some point or they were a conservative, even there, that feeling exists, and that's on purpose. So it's just a continue. You're always supposed to feel like you're kind of a heel for being a Republican.
Yeah, there's no moral confidence. In fact, I know I've talked about this in chats with you before, Mike, going to college, going to university. I am the only confident right winger any of these people have ever met.
Right.
They are used to any right winger making an argument. Number one, immediately just having all of their basic premises. And number two, kind of conceding along the way. Like, oh, yeah, you have a point about that. I'm not a racist. I'm not a homophobe. I'm just like, oh, no, you're wrong.
what you're describing
they've
is
never
what
you met anyone like that.
Me and Mike experienced that when we went into Facebook groups years ago. Yeah. Is these they would have these like tame, corralled little conservatives, and they would just kind of beat up on them. And then we appeared, and it caused like literal like emotional trauma to those.
I've made people cry in class. I have made people cry in class.
Yeah,
and I'm not loud or mean.
And it's not because you're like being mean. You're just making arguments that just
that they
demolish
can't.
Their point of view.
Sometimes you're also being mean, though. But that's mean. That is mean.
The best that is, mean. All right, fine. Yeah, you got me there. Yeah.
The funniest reaction though is when they say something like, "Stop yelling!" when you're not.
Yeah.
It's like I'm typing on the internet.
Yeah.
Like, why are you interpreting this as yelling? What's going on here? So basically. And I know this is our appeal to white people in this country that aren't libtards. I don't even want to call them conservatives because I don't actually think that most white people are actually conservatives. I think they're just like confused as shit.
Like, middle American radicals. That's where our demographic is, the middle American radical. It's, yeah. It's they don't conform to either liberal or conservatism.
Yeah, yes, enlightened centrists, really. But yeah. But I would say like to that. But even they are getting very confused by everything that's going on. So I'd say to them, like, don't you want to actually make these people cry? Because I know I do.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like part of this...
I got called a right wing Marxist yesterday by a libtard. Fine. And they racked their brains. Like, this is gonna make this right winger so upset. I was like, okay, all right,
good.
Whatever.
That's a compliment. I consider that a compliment, frankly.
So you're saying I'm well read? Okay. Yeah. Fine. Guilty as charged.
Well, I was a Marxist at one point. And I'm actually glad that I was, because even though a lot of that stuff is bullshit, the way that they think infected me for life, which is that they think with absolute 100% certainty and moral confidence. That's actually one of the secrets to them, to what they're doing, is they have no doubts about what they're doing, which is funny because themselves they would say that judging things in terms of this is stupid. It's like some kind of sentimental bullshit. But like looking at like how moral narratives are analyzed and stuff, they're like, that's postmodern shit. But I'm like, well, but
Alex and I talked
about,
Alex and I talked about this the other day. They have totally ditched postmodern thought in universities for their intellectual class. They teach moral absolutes.
Yeah, because postmodernism is too self-critical. It's too abstract. It actually makes you think too
much. Well, what it was critiquing these institutions and systems, and they were controlled by people who left it and like. Now they're in control.
It's really just Jews. Like, let's be honest. Like, it's Jews, right? Like,
yeah, that's pretty much what it was.
Yeah, it was this Jewish strategy to power. It was like. We were talking about on Strike and Mike Stryker talked about the Kitin Forest Jewish method of taking power, which is where you literally take the top people in society into the woods and kill them and replace them with Jews. That's what they did in Poland. Like during the war, they literally killed off the entire top strata of Polish society and then just replaced it with Jews at the end of the war and instituted like one of the most brutal communist states in existence until the 60s when the Poles started taking it back from the Jews and were actually then accused of being brutal anti-Semites and when the United States got like started really putting sanctions on Poland. But and when a lot of Polish Jews moved to the United States and wrote books like The Painted Bird, which made every Polish person out to be like a perverted rapist brute that like molests kids. But that's what happened.
Or Mouse, where the Poles are pigs in it compared to the Germans who are depicted as cats.
Right, exactly. So, or there's the method they did in America, which is actually like the Gramscian, like the slow march, where they basically just attack and undermine the institutions until they're in charge of them.
They any of the functionary. I always think of the State Department in the United States.
Holy Jewish.
But the state, interestingly, until the 1970s, it started transforming in the 1960s. The State Department was this incredible bastion of WASP America that was just packed with WASPs. You would not find a Catholic. You couldn't find a Southern Baptist. I mean, it was like Northern WASPs. And then in the 1960s, they began the steady transformation of the moment that some WASP official would retire, they would replace them either with an available Jew or in the interim a Catholic. Now, I'm not critiquing Catholics. I was raised Catholic, so anyone who's going to bitch, shut up. This is just what they did.
Yeah.
They would replace them with some kind of interim personality until they could get a Jewish person permanently into the position. And when you look at the State Department, once a Jewish person gets into a position, they almost never relinquish it as an ethnic group. It will never go to anyone else again.
Right.
Now, honest Catholics will tell you that a lot of Catholics collaborated with Jews in order to undermine the WASP establishment.
Okay, well, thank you, because I don't want to have all the other
Catholics. It's just true. I mean, is it an accident that on the Supreme Court, anyone who's not Jewish is Catholic?
Except for Gorsuch, he's the only one.
Gorsuch and Thomas. Oh, no, Thomas is Catholic. Never mind.
Thomas is Catholic, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, jeez, a black Catholic?
He's also black.
That makes me feel weird.
He's black.
Like, I know they exist in Africa, but in America, that makes me feel very odd.
Well, probably.
They also exist in Louisiana, but.
Well, but probably.
I've never been there.
Probably he converted for power reasons.
Oh, he did. I'm pretty sure he converted. I'm almost certain he did.
I mean, we could easily look that up. He's probably Baptist or something like that by birth, like most niggers are, you know?
Not a cradle Catholic. See, now we've talked about the cat. I've brought up Catholicism. I'm like,
well, even Roberts, John Roberts, isn't a Catholic by birth. He's a WASP. He converted because you can't be a WASP and be on the Supreme Court anymore.
Gorsuch is the weird one who converted basically to being a WASP.
He's just weird all around. That guy is just weird. He's like a libtard. Like, he's like an evangelical libtard, basically. But yeah.
Oh, but the interesting.
Wow, Thomas actually did grow up as a devout Catholic. That is weird. Wow.
Oh my God, that's odd. So, that makes me weirdly uncomfortable. But you'll notice one of the reasons that they still gatekeep against WASPs so hard is because WASPs are true believers in the system. They hate Israel. Just as an example, Israel is a racist apartheid state. I hate Israel. You cannot bring, you know, someone named Morgan Smith into your system because she won't make a moral exception for Israel.
Yeah. Yes. This is a huge problem now. There's plenty of Anglo-Saxon Americans and Protestant English descended Americans who are like not elite people.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I don't think like this. But when you look at
when
the elite,
I say WASP, I mean the elite class of saying.
Yeah, yes. But there are plenty of Protestant, like mostly English blood people that are just working class, millions of them. Frankly,
they're still one of the largest groups. They're still one of the largest groups in the United States. I bring this up all the time because if you were to look at the quote unquote distant right, you would think that's somehow representative of the demographics of the United States. You would think, like, oh wow, the United States must be like a majority white Catholic country. And I was like, we're 10%. White Catholics are at best 10% of the United States population. Yeah. It's still like 30 to 40%. White Protestant of some variety in this country.
Most white people are English or German in this country, frankly.
Yeah.
That's just what, or some derivation thereof.
I mean, I LARP with the whole French and Russian ancestry, which I do have, but I'm still 25% Anglo. I can trace my heritage all the way back to the colonial times. I have
Anglo, about the same amount of Anglo. Like, you just can't escape it.
I don't have any.
They were the founders of this country, so.
Yeah.
Unless it's hidden somewhere in the Scandinavian, which maybe it is, but the genetics might be somewhere in there, but I don't know. But I'm 20th century immigrant scum, so it doesn't matter. I'm literally post-Civil War.
That's basically what happened with my family as well. Just the Anglo side got diluted out, so.
Yeah. But I guess the Serbian side of my family would have been Orthodox, which I think they were.
Oh, geez, Mike, are you going to go listen to 10 hours of Orthodox chanting on YouTube after the show? Oh,
no, I'm just not into religion. It's just not my thing. It's fine.
Growing up, actually,
in the Episcopal Church, that definitely colored my perception of religious people, where I'm just like, I find it hard to believe when the people are actually really believers in the religion. I know that that's not an accurate perception. I know there are people that are actual believers, but growing up in a church where basically just nobody believed it, and it wasn't even like a dirty secret. It was just like, it was literally just a social club. It was just a social club for the successful white people in the town I grew up in to make sure that their kids like knew. And they wouldn't even tell themselves this themselves, but it was basically to introduce, you know, kids to other kids of good families.
See, for
at the
me,
church, which is a role that it always plays, but nobody believed it. And they would even talk about how we didn't believe it. We'd go to Sunday school and talk about how we didn't believe this stuff. But it was sort of interesting from like a sort of an anthropological perspective to look at these things, which is still, frankly, the approach I take to it today. And that's because of my upbringing. So there it is. People can hate me for that if they want, but that's just the truth.
Similar for me with the Catholic Church, except for I've always sort of been as odd as I am in terms of like research and knowing things. And when I was young, I just, and Borzoi can back me up here, there is in the general Catholic population, there is a gargantuan incongruence between what the church is telling you and what everyone in your church believes in terms of social attitudes. The gulf, yes, is so huge. It's incredible. And I just couldn't jive with that. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And I haven't been religious since I was 13, and I never will be again.
What was that? Did you see that video of the Pope with like Cirque du Soleil or something? Like
oh God. Oh,
the carnival. Yeah.
That shit was funny, man. I'm sorry. That was funny.
And the one priest who was left looked like he was having a very good time.
He was just like, unless it's a different one. It was like a cardinal. What's the one that wears like the black robe and the yarmulke? That one.
Those were cardinals.
Okay, yeah. I mean, those things.
No. Cardinals wear red.
Sometimes they wear black.
No, I have
black with red trim.
Oh, maybe. Okay, sorry. I didn't see the video, so.
They were cardinals.
Black,
they had
red trim, like Natasha Kerensky.
Huh? Hard to be.
Anyway.
I'm pretty sure those are cardinals.
Oh, yeah, probably. Online Catholics are having a hard time right now because I've been seeing the reactions to it. A lot of non-Catholics on Twitter are basically just been dunking on the Vatican all week because of that video. And my poor fellow Catholics are basically like, this happens every year. This isn't a big deal. It's like,
well, see,
people find it weird. I'm sorry. That's just like, I'm not going to wade into this.
It looks legitimately weird. I mean, the funny thing is the post I saw of it, you know, the text was written in Cyrillic. So I was like, okay, so the Russians are having a go at this as well. But yeah,
I had a really good moment the other day when the Pope came out saying he would consider blessing same-sex unions. And I actually laughed out loud because my entire time in our politics.
Let me stop you right there, James, because we're at an hour and a half, and
we can
pick this conversation up next hour. And if you're listening to the free hour and you want to hear James's insightful take on the Pope blessing same-sex marriages, get a subscription at therightstuff.biz/paywall, and we'll see everybody next hour.
You're listening to TDS on The Right Stuff.
.biz.